following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wings up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Taking a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Episode number 101 of Inside Eagle Nation. Got through episode number 100, and it's on to the next 100. Danny Reed is for another edition of Inside Eagle Nation. Colin Lacey alongside the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed.
Well, geez, when you say it like that. last week was a lot of fun, and I hope the next 100 are even better.
Let's do it, and then we'll do another 100, and then we'll get there when we get there.
I thought about this. I thought about how many of these we could actually do. How many stories can we possibly get out of Roger? And
whatever that number is, we're going to do it.
Because he gave us quite a bit of stuff just last week. We were able to record some more with him, and we'll get to some of those here very, very soon. I think that if we can just keep talking about different things, he's going to get to a point where he says, oh, that reminds me of, and then just go off for the next 15 minutes.
It's like we talked about last week. A lot of the best stories that we get from Roger are not from questions we actually asked.
No.
I mean, you think about the Bob Hope air conditioning Hanner Fieldhouse. That came from us talking about the Beatles playing at Hanner and Lee Greenwood's concert at Paulson. That's where the story of Bob Hope air conditioning Hanner came from.
I just know that they were very late that night. Because we saw the poster.
We did.
We talked with Chad Willis that day a few months ago. I think it was back during the summer.
And then Aaron and I dug up a picture of Lee Greenwood in the concert, and he's got the Georgia Southern sweatshirt on underneath the leather jacket.
I remember you sending me that picture, asking me who this was, and I thought, okay, should I know who this is, or do you need me to tell you who this is? And I even said it to Daryl Lynn because she has a Google phone, and they've got this facial recognition software, and it can actually tell you who a person is, what a stadium is, what a flower is, just by looking at the pixels or things like that. And even it couldn't figure it out. And then you sent me a text about Lee Grant. Of course.
Because we were trying to figure out who it was because I had zero clue. I wasn't even thinking Lee Greenwood.
And then Roger tells the story. Then Bucky told the story last week about getting him back in. That's got to be one of the better moments in the history of Paulson Stadium.
Yeah, I would think so. But hopefully a lot more along the horizon for Georgia Southern. Before we get too deep into this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation, as always, Inside Eagle Nation presented by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. A lot to get to in this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation as far as other sports are concerned, but where else do we start other than men's golf? Last Tuesday, took home the title in the Bash in the Borough as the team. Eagles finished 33 under as a group, taking the team title, and then Georgia Southern one-upped that by taking the top four individual medalists as Mason Williams takes home his first victory, shooting a 10 under par. Jake Maples comes in second at 7 under. Ben Carr and Colin Bowles tie for third with 6 under par, and that will wrap up the fall portion of their season, and no better way to do it than at your own home tournament.
Didn't you tell me that there was a really cool story that came out of Mason Williams winning the whole thing?
Yes. Aaron Soka was, because Tuesday I was out there for most of it, and then right as they're coming to 18 is when we had to go and shoot for Blue White Weekly. And so Aaron was giving me updates as they got to 18, and apparently somebody came up to Mason and said, "Hey, congratulations, you did it." He looks around and says, "What'd I do?" "You just won the whole tournament." He goes, "Oh, well, how about that?" But congratulations, head coach Carter Collins and company, for taking home the Bastion of the Borough tournament this past Tuesday. Georgia Southern men's soccer, a tough loss at Coastal Carolina on Sunday afternoon as they fell in overtime 2-1. Coastal scores with less than a minute to go in the first overtime. Georgia Southern looks to bounce back as they will head out to Arkansas to take on Central Arkansas, a 3 p.m. kickoff on Saturday. Georgia Southern women's soccer fell 1-0 to South Alabama on Friday, but bounced back in a big way on Sunday afternoon, and they got the 3-1 victory over the Trojans of Troy. Two goals by Marcella Montoya, and then Deborah Ruiz had one that, if you haven't seen it already on social media, you need to go check that out on Georgia Southern women's soccer social media pages. She was pressuring the Troy keeper. Troy's keeper tries to just clear it away. Ruiz is able to get the deflection, and the deflection goes straight into the goal.
I felt like I was there.
Yeah, you should have, but you still need to go watch the video.
I will.
Georgia Southern women's soccer will finish up the regular season on Wednesday at Coastal Carolina, 6 p.m. the kickoff from Conway. That's a game that was supposed to be one of the first games in Sun Belt Conference play, but because of weather earlier on this season, that one was postponed and now will be made up on Wednesday to finish out the regular season before they head to Foley, Alabama for the Sun Belt Conference tournament.
Lambert's Cafe.
Taste the dinner rolls. Georgia Southern Swimming and Diving will open up the season up in Buies Creek, North Carolina, as they take on Campbell this coming Saturday. Everything gets going up in North Carolina at noon. Georgia Southern Women's Rifle takes on UAB on Saturday, and this is going to be another interesting match for Georgia Southern Women's Rifle. We've talked about they did the postal match where them, along with VMI, they shot in their own facility and then sent each other the scores and figured out who won, who came in what place. Well, Women's Rifle is going to be hosting UAB over at the Shooting Sports Education Center. It is closed to the public, and so what does Georgia Southern Women's Rifle do? They're making it available on Twitch, so you can go online and watch the match against UAB.
Twitch.
It is. You ever Twitched before?
Well, yeah, but I don't know that I've I don't know that I've heard of Twitch.
Twitch is more, I think, for like gaming. Like people can stream themselves playing video games, but it also works with,
because that sounds like something that I would do.
Yeah.
We don't have time for that. It sounds like Drake, but we don't have time for all of that.
But you can watch on Twitch for Georgia Southern Women's Rifle again this coming Saturday morning. Georgia Southern Volleyball got back on the court this past weekend in Mobile as they fell in three matches to South Alabama, two on Thursday, one on Friday. Look to bounce back as Georgia Southern Volleyball will finally get to bump, set, and spike it inside Hanner Fieldhouse. Return home Friday against Georgia State, 6 p.m. the first serve, and then Saturday first serve against the Panthers at 1 p.m. This past weekend, Georgia Southern softball also in action, had their Fall World Series. We talked about the draft video that they put up last week on social media, and I believe the Navy team took home the College World Series title. But a fun week of softball over at Eagle Field. As Georgia Southern, not necessarily the most fun trip to Conway this past weekend for Georgia Southern football, falling to the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers by a final score of 28-14. It was a game that was 14-all at halftime, but really in the second half is when Coastal Carolina's defense really gave Georgia Southern's offense problems.
It boiled down to the Eagles not being able to run the football. 119 yards, 3.2 yards a carry. A matchup of spread option schemes. Coastal only ran for 130, but 128 of that came in the second half, and 85 of that came in the fourth quarter. So Georgia Southern defensively was dominating the game outside of those two long passes that resulted in two Coastal touchdowns. And remember, the Chanticleers were playing with their backup quarterback. Fred Payton had to step in when Grayson McCall was unable to go. That was announced about an hour and a half before. And the Eagle defense got a boost with Kendrick Duncan coming back. We were told that he may be able to play a little bit. He ends up getting in the third series of the game. And all indications are that he should be available to start on Thursday against South Alabama, which we will get into in just a couple of moments. But the subject of identity came up on the Ford Locker Room wrap-up. And when you're an option team and you cannot do the very thing that makes you an option team, you are not going to win very many games.
No.
When you can't establish the dive. Now, granted, J.D. King was okay. He wasn't up to what he had done the first four games of the season, 15 carries, 67 yards, and the only offensive touchdown. But he was somebody that was averaging well over 100 yards per game going in. They couldn't get the dive going. They couldn't get the inside zone going. And in the process, Shy Wertz was mostly ineffective running the football. Wesley Kennedy only had six offensive touches. And the point is, when you can't do the thing that makes you who you are, you lose track of what that identity was. What we did see, though, is Georgia Southern continued to develop that RPO part of the offense. And there were a couple times where Shy put balls on the money. Caleb Hood had a 17-yard catch. Malik Murray came up with a 14-yard reception. He also had a brilliant 32-yard over-the-head catch that set up that J.D. King touchdown run at the end of the second quarter, which was why the game was tied at 14 going into the locker room. But after Shy returned from cramping with 12:15 left, Coastal had just put together a 14-play drive, but they missed the field goal. That should have been the moment where they lost momentum, and the Eagles getting one of the league's best at that position back, that was time to take control of the game and beat a top 25 team. It started fine. J.D. King went for 7 yards. It was one of his best carries all afternoon, and you had a second down and three with less than 12 to play. RPO. Try the bubble out to the left, a little bit too high. Okay, you're third and three. Angle route to Kennedy. Same play was run against UMass. This one was more open. He just didn't catch the ball. And I know that there are probably some that are wondering, okay, on second and three, you're an option team. Why aren't you running the football? When you're averaging 3 yards per carry up to that point and Coast was pretty much taking away the middle and they had taken down the Eagles six times behind the line of scrimmage that day anyway, you had to find ways to be innovative to create space because clearly it wasn't working in the way that the offense wanted to on Saturday. And that play, I think, changed the game. If that ball is caught, it's a first down, and Georgia Southern can continue that drive. Are they going to score? I have no idea. But by giving the ball back to Coastal following a three and out, they never broke stride. They finally got their running game going. They found C.J. Marable down the seam for what turned out to be the game winner. Eagles go three and out again. Missed call on a flipping of the punt shield. It should have been a 15-yard penalty. Eagles keep the football down seven. But Javon Hiley, 40-yard punt return. Next play is a touchdown run. It's game over in less than 2 minutes. The game was done at that point. And it really came down to just not being able to execute. And these guys know that they have the ability to execute. And they know that they are probably capable of being a 5-0 team. Because I think that the talent was on Georgia Southern's side. I think that Georgia Southern was the more talented team on Saturday. But as we mentioned, the reason why Coastal was undefeated is because they were playing their game really, really well. And it didn't matter that Grayson McCall didn't play because Fred Payton stepped in and continued to move the train forward. Georgia Southern simply couldn't hold up its end. They did so on defense for as long as they could. But when the offense couldn't tap into its identity, I'll say, it left the defense in a tough spot, and I think they just gave out at the end.
Yeah, and you look at the defensive effort that Georgia Southern gave, and we've talked about it with Coach Lunsford both after the game and on Monday with the coaches show, that was not a bad defensive effort game. You had a couple of missed assignments early in the game, but then after that, it was one of the top games as far as tackles for loss is concerned in a while for Georgia Southern, and it was just got to the point where a hot afternoon, a hot turf, because Russ was telling me in my ear how it was smoldering it was that turf.
It got a lot hotter in the press box because of all the metal they put in the mid-deck that they just finished up to expand their stadium, and the way that their turf is, when it bounces directly up and into the press box, we couldn't see our laptop monitors. We could barely see the television. It got hot.
Yeah.
And you can only imagine what that defense was going through when they couldn't get off the field. They were on, I think it was 19 out of 22 plays at one point with the game on the line. And you think even if the offense would have gotten one first down, milk a little bit of clock, and let those defenders catch a little bit of wind. But unfortunately, Coastal's continuing this little magic carpet ride they're on, and I still don't think people were ready for them to be this good yet. But they're 5-0. They're still top 25. They've got a test this weekend going to Atlanta to take on Georgia State. So that'll be an interesting one to keep tabs on. If the Eagles don't take care of South Alabama on Thursday, then you're going to be watching Saturday's game with a very much of a different eye.
We talked about how the biggest difference for this Coastal Carolina team was Grayson McCall. You talked about it earlier, how 90 minutes before the game, it was announced that he was not going to be playing, had been battling a shoulder injury, and just couldn't go for this game. But this is a much improved Coastal Carolina team. I think a lot of people look at Grayson McCall as the reason why this Coastal team is where it's at. And rightfully so, he's been pretty outstanding the first four games of the season for them. But this is a much better Coastal Carolina team than years past. And it's a lot of the same guys. You look at Fred Payton as the guy that was the quarterback for Coastal Carolina a year ago before he got beat out by Grayson McCall. He was a lot better than I remember him last year. There were a lot of guys, and the unit as a whole really performed a lot better than I was expecting when we got word that Grayson McCall was going to be out.
I think that defense for Coastal took it upon themselves to say, look, we're rolling right now. I know we lost maybe the player of the year in the league to this point. We need to pick it up, and they did. The defense on both sides were really good. The front sevens for both were really good. But what turned out to matter was that Georgia Southern gave up four pass plays of 20 yards, and Coastal gave up only one really important pass, the Murray catch that led to the J.D. King touchdown. Their secondary doesn't get enough credit. It's not the strongest part of their defense, but I think it is able to more than hold up its end. This can still be a benefit for Georgia Southern because of where it has happened. From here on, you've got five of your last seven at home in a place where the Eagles are 13-2 in their last 15. You've got the next three right here at Allen E. Paulson. So if you're going to attack the East Division, you're going to get a chance to do it where you're very good historically, and it starts on Thursday.
Eagles put the 28-14 shortcoming to Coastal Carolina to bed and look ahead to the South Alabama Jaguars on national television on ESPN on Thursday night, 7:30 the kickoff, and we'll have the coverage on the Georgia Southern Sports Network starting at 5:30. We'll dive into South Alabama in the final segment of this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation, but for now, we step aside for some Eagle Tales.
Time now for Eagle Tales with Danny Reed and Roger Inman.
Roger, 1985 was the first year that Georgia Southern claimed a national championship, and one of those early rivals was Middle Tennessee. They had a character as their head coach, a guy by the name of Boots Donnelly. What's your recollections of him?
We beat Boots in the playoff game here at Georgia Southern. That was a unique year. We opened up with Jackson State, beat Jackson State pretty significantly, brought in Middle Tennessee, and Coach Donnelly always had a pretty good rapport. Every time he would walk down the ramp by the visitors' locker room, he'd look at me and said, "Did you roll the field tight today?" When you went up in those days and played on his field, it was the old AstroTurf, like playing on concrete, just had a green tint to it. But Coach Donnelly was asking, did you have the field rolled tight? And I said, I rolled it tighter on your side than it did on our side. But Coach Donnelly always had a very good rapport.
Thanks, Roger. Now let's head to Colin Lacey with this week's Beyond the Bio.
Time now for Beyond the Bio with Colin Lacey.
So we continue on this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. We step into Beyond the Bio, and this week back to Creative Services with Jeremy Winder. Jeremy, appreciate you joining us.
Glad to be here, Colin. Really appreciate it. Always good catching up with you and the guys.
take us a little bit back into your story. When did you decide that video and media was something that you wanted to do as a career?
It's pretty interesting. I actually started probably when I was, say, junior in high school. After football season ended, I would go to the basketball coach, say, hey, do you need somebody to record your games? One thing led to another. Went from doing that to be a manager, videographer for the basketball team at Winthrop University, where I attended college, and that just turned into a career. Been quite a journey.
Part of that journey is you spent some time in news television. Take us through what that kind of did for what you do now.
It really gave me an opportunity to focus on getting to know people. And with that, I got to spend a lot of time around college athletes, because Winthrop is the biggest thing that we have in Rock Hill, South Carolina, where I was living before I came down here to Statesboro. So I saw they had a position open for a director of video services at Winthrop University. I knew the people there. I had gone to school there. So I just took the opportunity, turned into a job. I really loved the video production side of things, as opposed to just general news and all of the sports that, you know, comes along with that. And turned into a career, and now I'm here in my second year, really enjoying it here down in Statesboro.
Joined by Jeremy Winder of Georgia Southern Creative Services, you talk about going from news back into college athletics. What was that transition like as you make your way back to Winthrop from 2015 to 2019? What were some of the big decisions that came from going from news back into college athletics?
Probably the biggest decision was just, you know, what do I want to focus on? Because it's such a different field. When you're working in news, you're definitely out there in the community more. But as opposed to when you're working in college athletics, you're more confined to a space. You're just out here doing games, you know. So the biggest thing was just giving up that connection I had with the community. Because even for years after I had stopped working at CN2 News in Rock Hill, there may be a day I may be out in the community at Walmart or something, and someone say, hey, aren't you the guy who used to be on TV doing sports? So that was the biggest thing, because people, you know me, know I'm a real people person. So that was probably the biggest, toughest decision part of that.
You mentioned you go back to Winthrop to serve as the director of video services. And you and I have talked about this a couple of times over the last couple of years, about everything that you kind of helped build at Winthrop as far as the production and the videos that got put out. What are some of the things that you're most proud of that you were able to do for Winthrop, which is also your alma mater?
I was just happy. I always tell people, whether it was news or in my position now, I'm just happy that I get to showcase young people achieving great things on the sports field. I mean, the numbers are great, and it's always good to get congratulations, but my true satisfaction comes from knowing that the people who I'm putting content out on are going to have something that they can keep with them that's going to last years down the road. Hopefully, you know, all these platforms are still around, you know, 40, 50 years from now, they can show their kids and grandkids, you know, hey, when I was out there on the court, or I was out there on the field, I was bad. So that's what I really enjoy most.
Last year, you got to experience something kind of special when Georgia Southern women's basketball goes back to Winthrop. I think it was somewhere in the second quarter, they flash you up on the Jumbotron that you were kind of a homecoming back to Winthrop as the women's basketball team playing up in Rock Hill. What was that like to kind of, you talk about it, how there's not a whole lot of and no real need that you feel for congratulations, but it's also good to feel it whenever you get it.
Well, that itself was very touching, just because being there so long, I had really did build some special relationships, some special friendships. That day, actually, I had gone out to a lunch with a few of my former coworkers that afternoon, and they said, oh man, we might have a surprise for you. I was like, what are y'all gonna do? Because I know we've had people come back to Winthrop before, former players, you know, who may be working with other schools now, coaching other teams. They don't do anything for them. So I was like, man, so I was really touched that they did that. It really meant a lot, you know. And it was you know, Rock Hill was a great, you know, 12 years, you know, from 2007 to 2019. You know, I tell people Greenville is where I grew up, but Rock Hill is where I became a man. And so it was you know, it was really touching, and just, you know, building those relationships. And it's a great moment, great memory. And you know, me and friends, we still talk about that from time to time.
Making the transition from Rock Hill down to Statesboro had to be a tough one, leaving the place that, like you say, you became a man. What's the biggest decision that was in moving from Rock Hill down here to Georgia Southern?
I just knew it was going to be a new challenge and a bigger environment for me. Those people who don't know, Winthrop, you know, is a Division I school, but we don't have college football, don't have football at all. So the biggest sport we have is men's basketball. So I really wanted to have the opportunity to be someplace where I could work with a college football team and see what that experience was like. And it has definitely been one of a kind. And even before I actually got the job, you know, people said, hey, if you get down there, you're going to love it. You know, it's definitely a college town, and, you know, they love their football down there, which is something I truly love. And, you know, everybody's been right. It's truly been a great experience. And, you know, getting to meet people like yourselves, all the people in the community, student athletes around here is great. And I've just been enjoying it down here very much.
We talk to a lot of people over the years, and one of the reoccurring themes is people don't necessarily get to Division I college football in the FBS without a lot of mentors in their life. Who are some of the people that really played a big impact on you, both professionally and personally?
Probably have to say one of the first people that definitely comes to mind is Mario Washington. He's the GM at ESPN 730 Radio in Charlotte. Actually gave me my first gig in the media business when he was working at WRHI Radio in Rock Hill, South Carolina, just running the boards. Then the people at CN2 News, Laura Bree Monday, Lucas McFadden, were my first full-time job when I was actually working there full-time before I had even graduated from college my last semester. And then just all the people I've worked with along the way, Rob Jones, Kelvin Thomas, Everett Hutto, who is now the producer for Wake Forest at the ACC Network, Dave Friedman, who's radio voice for Winthrop University, Mike Pacheco, who works at Winthrop University and also with the Carolina Panthers. There's been so many people, but like you said, it's definitely one of those things. We all have mentors, and I just feel like I take it upon myself to also be that to people who are interested in coming behind me. So I know y'all have talked to Mo, you know, I try to, you know, take things from him, but I also make sure I give things to him in the form of advice as well. You know, just always pay it forward, because there's always going to be somebody coming from behind you that you can help out as well.
One of the things that we see week in and week out is anybody that works in college athletics has experienced something different. What are some of the experiences that really stick in your mind of some of the things that you've gotten to do because of your work?
Really, just the places I've gotten to go, the travel is definitely something different and unique that you don't get in most job fields. And then just building these relationships, and the time you put in, because, I mean, you know as well as anyone, it can be some late nights. And but just the overall experience, you know, every day, especially coming down here, everything with football is a new experience. Even with swimming and diving, you know, we didn't have that at Winthrop. So, you know, swimming and diving is new experience. So I just truly just take everything in and just try to enjoy it and savor the moment, because you don't know how long it's going to last, especially in these uncertain times of COVID. You know, you enjoy every game. You enjoy every time you get to, you know, step out on the field, you know, with your camera, and get to spend time with athletes. Every time you get to travel somewhere, you just take it all in and just relish it.
Finally, before we let you go, this segment's called Beyond the Bio. Give us something that people seeing you on game day may not know, something beyond your bio.
Well, most people will probably notice about me now because I've been so vocal about it, but it's not on my bio, I don't think. I was actually born in Germany. My dad's a military, so I was born in Germany, 1988. We moved to Anniston, Alabama in 1991, so spent 4 years there. And then moved in 1995 to Malden, South Carolina, a little town in Greenville. And I know y'all got to meet some of my family when women's basketball played at Furman last year. So that was another fun trip going back home. But yeah, that's the thing I love to tell people is I was born in Germany. And AJ likes to give me a hard time when I wear my Germany jacket, the national team jacket from the World Cup a couple of years ago. I have in my collection.
Jeremy, appreciate your time. Appreciate everything that you do for Georgia Southern Athletics, and we'll talk soon.
Appreciate you having me on, man, and go Eagles.
Once again, that's Jeremy Winder for Georgia Southern Creative Services. A lot of the videos that you've seen over the last couple of years are courtesy of Jeremy. You see him on the sidelines, and he is somebody that gets more fired up on the sidelines than a lot of video people. We've talked about Russ's new dance he has with the catch, but Jeremy is a guy that you can look down at any point in the game and see him rocking out to whatever's going over the PA.
Since he spent some time with the Winthrop Eagles, it would only stand to reason that he come and work for the Georgia Southern Eagles.
He's very partial to Eagles.
Yes. You ask him about his career. Oh, yeah, I like my time with the Eagles. Which one? Yeah.
Yes.
I sure did.
Georgia Southern looks ahead to the South Alabama Jaguars coming into Allen E. Paulson Stadium this weekend. Again, on ESPN at 7:30, we'll start the coverage on the Georgia Southern Sports Network with the Eagle Tailgate Show starting at 5:30. It'll be Military Appreciation Day. Word has it there may be a flyover. Going to have a lot of representatives from the Georgia Army National Guard and the Army ROTC here on campus in attendance. But this is a South Alabama team, comes in 3-2, 2-0 in Sunbelt Conference play after knocking off ULM to send them to 0-6 this past weekend out at Hancock Whitney Stadium.
Oh, Warhawks.
Yeah, poor ULM.
Warhawks.
I tried. With the pick'em that we've started in the pregame show, yeah. I tried to give them a little boost.
Well, Georgia Southern tried too a few weeks ago, but that didn't work out either.
We're trying. You can't say we're not trying.
Their schedule's going to get tougher. We do hope it improves, but they had chances. It's not like they didn't move the ball on South Alabama. They had almost 400 yards of offense, but their first drive, they threw an interception in the red zone that turned out to be a pick six. That was Devin Rocket with the interception. South Al's first pick of the year ends up as a pick six, 95 yards, longest interception return in South Alabama history. And then ULM drives down to start the third quarter, misses a 28-yard field goal. They have another drive in South Al territory. They have a bad snap on a 4th-and-1. So they had their chances. But when you're going like that, it's tough when things go right. Like with Coastal Carolina, when you're going well, hardly anything seems to go wrong. With ULM, can't get anything to go right. Give credit to South Alabama. They had more than 400 yards of offense, 3 touchdown receptions for Kawan Baker. He's going to be a very tough one to handle on Thursday with as much speed as he has, and he had one of those long touchdowns against the Eagles last year.
You talk about the pick six, the first of South Alabama's season by Devin Rocket. The only thing that I can think of is on my way back from Coastal, I was listening to JT Crabtree call the game for the Jaguar Sports Network, and that guy has about as much energy as the Energizer Bunny does. And he was about as fired up as any pick six I'd ever heard.
He does not need to be told to ramp it up.
No, he does not. But you look at South Alabama, going with somewhat of a two-quarterback system, Desmond Trotter's more than likely going to be the starter. And then Chance Levertich, the transfer from Mississippi Gulf Coast Community College, going to split time. Trotter takes the majority of the snaps. Levertich probably will see time at some point, so it's not a true two-quarterback system. It's just a matter of which one is going to be in which series.
This past Saturday, Levertich played 2 drives. It was mostly Trotter because Trotter was having a pretty good game. He had those 3 passing touchdowns. He also ran one in. He had 217 yards of total offense. Something about him, I think we've established the fact that he is not a great runner, but he is a capable runner, so somebody that you have to be mindful of. High school teammates with Raynard Ellis at Shades Valley in Alabama, so I'm sure Raynard will look forward to tattooing him because he's been ripping people up the last 2 weeks against UMass and Coastal Carolina. But when they throw the ball, they take their shots.
Yeah,
it is deep ball after deep ball, similar to Arkansas State. These guys have the weapons to do it. We talked about Kawan Baker, who I think is the best offensive weapon they have, but Jalen Tolbert has been their best receiver. He's 2nd in the league, averaging 19 yards a catch. You may have seen him that opening night victory over Southern Miss. He went 6 for 169, their third play of the game. I think it was a 3rd and 15. He goes 73 yards for a touchdown, no flags, and they were out the gate from there. Don't forget about Jalen Wayne. He's top 10 in the league, averaging 15 yards a catch, somebody that had played running back before, but is really emerged as a receiver. And for an Eagle secondary that has played better the last 2 weeks, they still gave up those couple of big plays. There have been some breakdowns, but you would think that those would be minimized now with Kendrick Duncan back, and then getting hopefully some reinforcements from Javon Jackson. He hasn't played for the last 3 weeks, but hopefully he'll be able to give it a go on Thursday. They are a very capable passing team, going for about 270 per game. They can run it a little bit, but this is a team at the moment, they are better at throwing the football, despite Steve Campbell's efforts to make them a spread option team.
You know, you touch on three of their wide receivers, but you missed the one with the best name.
Because I wanted to let you do this. It's not fun if I take it from you.
I mean, depends on who you ask. They have a wide receiver, freshman from Mobile, named Colin Lacey. I was listening to JT on the ride back from Conway, and first thing I hear is Colin Lacey in motion. I'm like, huh?
That sounds like one of those where if you could slip it in at some point during the second or third quarter, maybe nobody will hear it, and maybe somebody gave you a bet. It's like, I bet you I could say Colin Lacey somehow,
right,
but
exactly.
He's a freshman. He's a speedster out of Mobile. He's somebody that they ultimately want to be that Kwon Baker type of guy. I think he has that skill set. I think ultimately Steve Campbell wants to get him around 10 touches per game. But, yeah, if you hear him on Thursday when we say Colin Lacey, it's not that we have discovered that you have eligibility at another school in another sport. It's just that, well, he spells his differently.
I guarantee you he's a lot faster than me.
The fact that it's spelled differently isn't going to matter on the radio. But
yeah, he spells it C-A-U-L-L-I-N. I've never seen somebody spell it that way.
Here's what we can do, though. We can put you in the slot, and then we'll bring him up to the booth to to run the equipment.
Well, that's going
to
be a bad day for South Alabama.
Hey, I had to run the ref mic for a little bit on Saturday.
That you did.
And of course,
of course, because
this was great.
Lord have mercy.
Go ahead.
Right before kickoff, something went wrong with Russ's mic on the sideline. And Coastal, across the way, he had to come, so I told him that I was going to meet him at the bottom of the elevator. So, as I'm running out of the booth is when kickoff is happening. So, I run downstairs, and I get about two flights down because, goodness knows, you can't take the elevator in Conway because that's the slowest elevator in the history of mankind. I get about three steps into the stairs down, and I hear flag on the play. And I'm thinking in my head, uh-oh, I didn't know that I had told you how to turn the ref mic on our new board.
Aha!
And in my ear, I couldn't tell because the ref mic is in my ear anyway. So I couldn't tell if it was in or not, and I just kind of let it be. I was like, if that's the worst thing that happens, then we're good.
We've got a new piece of equipment this year. So we do things a little bit different when we need to put Russ in to speak or we need to put the ref in to speak. And you can actually change what you call each of the individual sliders.
Yeah, thank goodness I had it labeled as
so,
ref.
Okay, so one is me, two is Terry, three is Russ,
yes.
Four is ref. So I looked over as soon as the second play of the game had a flag on it. Nice little click.
I heard flag comes out, and I was like, crap.
No type of number. Trentis Livingston. We're going to hear from hopefully in 10 seconds if this works. Put it in there. Got him in. Slid it down.
Now, and then it was back-to-back plays you had a flag.
Yeah, the pass interference was the next play. Actually, come
on. Goodness gracious.
But I was back at the Citadel. I was doing everything. I mean, the setup, the engineering, the sponsor reads the stats and all that. So that's not something I had done for about seven years or so, but seeing you operate that before, and I think we had talked about, okay, this is going here, I'm going to call this, so in the instance that it would come up, so when you had to bolt to the sideline, yeah, I realized to flag, I'm like, oh, wait a minute, that's me. Because Terry's on the other side. We don't let Terry anywhere near the equipment after Florida in 2013. But when that happened, oh, this is me. Just made sure it was up, it worked, and it was all good. Jaguars.
Yes.
That was a side.
Yep. We've gotten away from our weekly random tangent, but get back to it. But South Alabama, you look at this South Al defense under defensive coordinator Greg Stewart, and a lot like we've seen with Coastal Carolina, not necessarily to that extent, but a lot of experience on this South Alabama team. You look at a guy like A.J. DeShazer, Riley Cole is a name that we've heard year in, year out. But Jeremiah Littles up front is a guy that really makes this defensive line go. 11 career tackles for loss, 4.5 career sacks.
He's the only one that's back that has any experience up front. They lost their entire defensive line. Now, the back eight, because this is a 3-4, the back eight does have a good bit of experience. But up front from a year ago, they lost, I think, their best player on defense in Tyree Turner. He had an ankle injury early and never really got in rhythm. Riley Cole, though, is somebody that's gotten on a Senior Bowl radar. He moved from the outside inside. He's third in the league in tackles, 4 tackles for loss. He was named Defensive Player of the Week after a 15-tackle effort against Texas State. But don't forget about Nick Mobley, a guy that was originally a walk-on, and now he's in a third-year starting position. He was 9th in the conference in tackles last year. So similar to last week when, with Coastal, it was Silas Kelly and Teddy Gallagher making just about every play. This week, expect 4 Cole and 46 Mobley to have their noses around the football.
And watching some of the film of South Alabama early on this week, this is a South Alabama team that, and Coach Lunsford talked about it last night on the coaches show, that they're really starting to take on the personality of their head coach. Steve Campbell now in his third season at the helm, and really was not left a great situation to take over in Mobile, but now have moved into their new on-campus facility at Hancock Whitney Stadium. And this just has a different feel around this South Alabama team than we've seen in the past.
Well, with all due respect, Georgia Southern had quite a bit to do with South Alabama not being in a very good situation when Steve Campbell took it over. There was that loss to the Eagles, the 0-9 Eagles in 17, 52-0 on Military Appreciation Day at Paulson Stadium that ended up forcing Joey Jones's resignation, I think, the following Monday or Tuesday, and now he's an assistant coach at Mississippi State working with their special teams. It's taken Campbell a little bit, and I think that he knew it was going to be at least 2 or 3 years. They'd won 5 games combined. They're already at 3-2. They haven't been over 500 this deep in the season in 4 years. They're off their biggest margin of victory in a conference game since 2014. I mean, they beat ULM. It seemed like a pretty convincing win at 38-14. We know that ULM had their chances. We had talked about that just a couple of moments ago. But to have the situation they do with back-to-back league wins off of their largest margin of victory against a like team, they've got to be feeling as well as they have in years. And what's their reward? Playing a Georgia Southern team that they're 0-6 all-time against. And they've scored 5 offensive touchdowns in 6 games. Now, that didn't mean much last year when it took 2 overtimes in Mobile. But it was similar to the Coastal game from last week. The only way that South Al was in that game was because of the big plays. Outside of that, Georgia Southern shut them down. But the Eagle offense didn't get rolling until late. That was Wesley Kennedy's first game off of suspension. He scored the game-tying touchdown late in the fourth quarter. Raymond Johnson blocked what would have been a game-winning field goal. Randy Wade had the sack to start double overtime. Johnson recovered that. And then a few plays later was Tyler Bass to send us home, thankfully.
It'll be a 7:30 kickoff from Allen E. Paulson Stadium, again on ESPN on the mothership. Georgia Southern will get things going on the radio at 5:30 with the Eagle tailgate show in the back of the tailgate lot. Frank, Russ, Terry, and myself will get it going back on the stage. And got to make sure you tune in to see who the picks are. Everybody across the leaderboard after week one is...
What is it so far?
4-2.
Everybody's 4-2.
Everybody's 4-2.
Okay, somebody's going to have to be the Maverick and go against the grain. I know you tried to with ULM.
It wasn't that we had all the same picks. It just happened to work that everybody kind of fell where... There was a couple of them that you knew you were pretty well locked into. Taking a look back at it, Frank and I had Georgia State over Troy. Russ had Troy.
Did that hurt to pick Georgia State?
It did.
Okay.
It did. And I had to convince myself to do it.
But okay.
And there for a minute, I thought, well, man, if I pick Georgia State and they don't come through, I'm going to be really upset. Frank and Russ took South Al over ULM. I tried to offer an olive branch of peace to ULM. They didn't want it. Everybody took BYU over Texas State. Frank took NC State over UNC. Russ and I had the Tar Heels, who ended up winning.
Right.
Everybody had Bama over Tennessee across the board. One that really messed us up, Iowa State and Oklahoma. All three of us had Iowa State across the board and let us down. So everybody's 4-2.
Have you thought of a name for this?
No, I have not.
Because I was wondering who would be the Lee Corso of that group.
Well, we don't have a huge head, and everybody is actually still together. One of us isn't remoting off.
Have you figured?
Yet.
Okay, have you figured out what the reward is going to be by the end of the year?
No, I've got to get with Frank and Russ because this kind of came out of nowhere that we started doing this. Had conversations late last week that this might be something fun to do and spark more random conversations. Like we need any of those, but I don't know. It's going to grow.
It'd be fun to get a guest picker.
Ooh. Aaron, you're up. But again, 5:30 will be the airtime on the Georgia Southern Sports Network as we'll get it going with the Eagle Tailgate Show. Until this weekend, for the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.